I found this rock. I'm going to name it. And people are like, it's got a name. And they're like, I'm going to name it. Look at our piano. They're like, you're literally starving.
No, okay, here's my defense here. This isn't about me being a xenomorph fucker. I would fuck the xenomorph. I'm gonna have sex with the xenomorph.
You are coming down with me.
Just like the Donner Party, we immediately went to cannibalism.
Can I say eco-terrorism on this podcast?
We gonna be round the clock trying to snatch a fish.
Because he has a beanus.
Because he has a beanus. Good evening to only those who know that dolphins started in the water, came out and lived like wolves for a while, and then went back in.
Welcome to Genre Blind, a podcast where we break down the cliches that make pop culture.
Every episode, we use the random trope feature on TV Tropes to spark discussions about the media therein.
You are contractually obligated to phrase all questions or comments in the form of a compliment. This is a swimming podcast. We both have degrees, and you're just going to have to trust us on this. His human name is Diggs Brown.
And her human name is Annalie Tominelli, and this is Dolphin Blind, now sponsored by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Just a programming note. We're not here to hate on tropes. We're here
or
to
dolphins.
Make you love them. Also, we are a pro-dolphin podcast.
My name is Annalie, and I, for one, am so thankful that we have been allowed, have decided to start up Genre Blind again.
It's really good to be back. I'm glad that we're doing this of our own volition.
We're sorry retroactively for any negative comments we have made in the past about dolphins.
Yes, it was brought to our attention that some of the things we said about dolphins may have offended some of our listeners and were in poor taste. We were not informed about what we were saying.
Yes, we have been re-educated. We have done some soul searching, and we now believe that dolphins are the coolest mammal, and that we like them very much.
They are so cool and interesting and good. I recently went to South Carolina, and I was very excited to see some of them swimming in the Wando River.
Wow, that sounds like a great time, an amazing time.
I had an excellent time and was not afraid of I loved seeing them.
I would also like to see dolphins more often as possible.
Yes, dolphins should coexist with humans because there's no risk at all. There are friends and neighbors.
Yes.
Should we start the podcast?
Yes. Onward with the podcast.
So the first trope, which was sent in by Bottlenose 69, is called "Humans are not the dominant species."
And how right of a trope that is.
What a good trope. So basically, this trope means, like, for as long as we as a species can remember, humans have been the dominant species on Earth, but this trope is where that is not the case, and it can only take place on an Earth or Earth-like planet. So,
as a trope, is pretty great.
Yes, we all like it. A great example of this, to use the obvious, is of course Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
Their hierarchy is a little bit different, being that it's it's mice first and then dolphins and then humans.
Wait, Diggs, are we allowed to say that?
This is according to Douglas Adams, not me.
Right.
Douglas Adams, who is already dead and buried in Highgate Cemetery.
Yes,
of course, dolphins rank higher than humans, and they leave Earth before it is destroyed. Another good example of this is the Wings of Fire series.
Hey!
Have you read the Wings of Fire series?
No, I have not.
Okay, so I worked in a bookshop, specifically in the kids section, and so I am intimately familiar with the Wings of Fire series, though I haven't read many of them. Basically, Wings of Fire takes place where, like, dragons are the dominant species,
oh,
and then, like,
yes,
humans are kind of considered, like, almost an endangered species.
Yeah.
Like, they used to be, like, the dominant species, but then, like, dragons kind of, like, took over and stuff.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
Because that goes into how in a lot of... I recently finished listening to Forest 404, where humans are pretty much extinct and robots are the, you know, AI is the next step in evolution.
Right.
And X-Men kind of has that similar theme of, like, some people are like, oh, no, they are freaks, but then others are like, no, we're the next step of human evolution, and then,
right.
you know, it's always an interesting back and forth on that.
Definitely. And then, like, there's also versions of this trope that are, like, at least, like, within the scope of the thing, mm-hmm. that, like, it doesn't focus on humans, and, like, they're not the dominant species within, like, the scope of the work, but, like, they might be, like, on Earth or whatever. Like, I always think about the Warrior Cat series, because,
yeah!
like, well, because, okay, so, like, two legs are still there, and they still, obviously, like, control the world, but for the cats, and, like, the clans and stuff, two legs don't control the world. They do. And the only thing that interrupts them is obviously, like, either two legs, like, picking up cats that they think are strays, or, like, Thunderpaths going through, like, the forest, and there's the risk of, like, cats getting, like, hit by cars and stuff.
Right.
But that's the same way of, like, a human person could get murdered by a bear.
Right.
Because you happen to come across it, right? Like, it's the same sort of,
oh, yeah.
of thing where it's not a direct threat all the time.
Oh, yeah. I love this trope because it's such a flip of the typical kind of Western colonialist dominance script.
Right.
If you think about it, hey, trees are cultivating humans to eat us.
Yes, they are.
Trees are growing humans so that when we die, we go into the ground and then feed the trees. But right now, they're like feeding us oxygen and they keep us less stressed and they feed us and they take care of us. They improve our health so that we are healthy. And then
they provide for us.
They provide for us. And then when it comes time for us to go into the ground, we are turned into edible tree food.
Which, side note, is becoming more and more, like, feasible across the U.S.
Ugh.
Oregon just legalized the recycling project where they're working on using humans as, like, compost, which is part of, like,
sustainable
body farms and stuff.
Yeah.
So that is a big win, and I'm very excited about it.
It's so good. It is so good. I don't know why I know why, but, you know, it's...
Well, because death is very scary, and my body doesn't need to go into the ground. I don't want to be eaten by worms. And things I'd like to be preserved forever.
Right, but that's the thing. Who are you fighting against? You're going to lose this battle. It's not anything. I love Caitlin Doughty's stuff because she's like, why are you putting that weird vacuum tube around your coffin for no reason? It's not gonna do anything. You're gonna lose.
Like even, and the rubber is even gonna make it worse.
Right.
Like,
are you gonna exhume the body? I guarantee you the rubber is gonna make the coffin weaker.
Also, like, eventually, it's all gonna go to the same place. You can embalm and like sarcophagi and do whatever. It's all eventually gonna be part of the same thing.
Oh, yes. Like, the bacteria is on the inside. The phone call is coming from inside the house.
Oh, yeah. You are fucking toast, and we should just make it a lot easier on our little decomposers.
It's so rock and roll because even if you're like, oh no, death is scary, that's all well and good, you are literally scientifically gonna be reincarnated into another energy form.
Right, just literally the physical matter.
Yep.
Like, not anything spirit, like whatever, talk about spirituality, like whatever your take on that is. Mm-hmm. Literally, the skin parts of your body
you're gonna
are going
get
to become a grass that's gonna be eaten by a cow, that's gonna be eaten by a guy.
It's
and
the
then
cycle
it's gonna become
life.
Quite literally.
You've eaten your ancestors.
So, as we can all see, this trope is Anna Lee, who
honestly
is working for the trees. Could potentially be a tree.
I am pro tree and also pro dolphin. And you know, everybody's like, well, I want conservation because of yada yada.
Oh my god,
yada.
I love nature.
I just love nature. I'm
The tree of life. I'm such an eco babe. That's why I use these recyclable straws with my plastic cups.
Eco! Can I say eco-terrorism on this podcast?
I think you can.
My favorite thing is in the Harley Quinn animated series, Poison Ivy is like, I identify actually as more of an eco-terrorist than a villain. And I'm like,
That's because you are Poison Ivy.
I love her so much. I love her so much. I love
it's because you
so
are
much.
And always have been Poison Ivy.
So yeah, the humans are not the dominant species. As soon as trees get thrown into the mix, and also dolphins, you know, we're not so hot. We think we're hot.
We're not so... You know where is hot?
Where?
The middle of the desert. Ooh. In the middle of summer. Because you had to leave at the right time so that winter wouldn't fall before you hit the mountains. Our next trope is... The pioneer.
Oh, good.
I want to talk about the Oregon Trail now.
Oh, it was only a matter of time before we talked about the Oregon Trail.
Oh, and this isn't even the Oregon Trail trope. This is the pioneer trope.
This is the pioneer.
This is different.
Trope. Oh,
pioneer
yeah.
trope. I recently have been listening to a lot of audiobooks because I have a new job as an archival assistant, and everyone can make their jokes about that. It's fine. It's way worse in person.
Hello, archivist.
I will skin you, actually.
Wait, you'll skin me. I was going to say, I'll skin you to dance the world new.
What shoes is he wearing? Anyway,
yeah.
The pioneer trope. So, recently, I have been listening to a lot of audiobooks while working in the archive, and my only piece of, like, connective tissue between them is I've only been reading books that contain survival cannibalism.
Oh, good. So we're back on brand with cannibalism.
We're back on brand. We're back on brand. So I listened to The Terror by Dan Simmons, which was really, really good, except for... Obviously not great takes on, like, native culture, but of course it is Englishmen in 1846.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting the most cool interactions.
Yeah. Honestly, like, so fucking funny how stupid these people are. Just like, I found this rock. I'm going to name it. And people are like, it's got a name. And they're like, I'm going to name it.
Yeah. Or straight up, they're like, we are dying up in the Arctic Circle. We have no food and we're freezing to death. And then they like run into a group of native folks who are like, warm, and like they're clearly fishing.
They're
fucking these idiots who are up here, not proper Englishmen. We should just murder them right here.
I know.
Whereas, like,
they're
if they were
warm.
Like chill, if they were chill, they would have been like, sick.
Yeah.
You're cool. Come roll with us, and we'll like hunt some stuff, and it'll be fine if you weren't just so flagrantly racist.
Right. It's always so funny. They're like, we're so superior. Look at our piano. They're like, that's super cute. You're literally starving. I don't know what to do
you're
with
starving.
Your gangrene.
Why are you man hauling a piano across pack ice? Go fucking... First of all, stop dressing in wool. It's gonna soak up water, you fucking dumbass. Get a skin, you bitch.
I kind of want to go out into everyday life and be like, yes, I'm a new discoverer of things. This is called... toothpaste, you dumbasses, but I'm going to call it Wigglywoff.
This building you've called the Empire State Building, I will call it Tall Pointy Friend. And I will direct all my friends to visit it in my name.
And it will be equally legitimate to all of these people who are like, thank goodness discovered a grasshopper. We're so happy.
Yeah. The sage grouse. Speaking of the sage grouse, okay, so I read The Terror by Dan Simmons, and then I read The Hunger by Alma Katsu, which, similar to the Terror, is like a historical fiction, slightly supernatural take, but instead of on the Erebus and Terror, it's on the Donner Party,
good.
Obviously.
Good.
Which, hey, these two expeditions overlap by a year, and that's fucking funny. 1846 was the year of goddamn cannibalism.
I was gonna say, I wonder if you mapped out just like the amount of cannibalism
human
time.
That was the time. That was the time.
Yeah.
It did, because that's when everyone was like expanding and stuff. But anyway, I read Survival Cannibalism there, and it's one of those books that like I really love, like the voice of the book. Obviously, I have a couple issues with like how they do the cannibalism, because I personally like my cannibalism to be meditated by humans,
what?
Not Okay. I think cannibalism is most effective in literature. I'm not talking about real life.
Sure.
I think cannibalism is most effective when it is humans getting to the point that they decide to eat other humans,
mm-hmm.
and not so much another force taking them over. Convincing is another thing, right? If it's another force that convinces a human to eat another human, that's like all well and good if you're going into like the supernatural category.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine and interesting because it's still the human being convinced and then taking the action themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I am talking about when it's like you can just become infected like zombie style,
right.
and then do an eating of flesh.
Which,
I am less interested in that.
Right. Because, I mean, it's kind of shown time and time again. Like, people have starved worse than cannibal parties.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
There have been people who have gotten hungrier and not resulted to cannibalism and survived.
Yep.
And then there are these expeditions that are just like, oh, well, we're pretty hungry. We should probably eat each other. And it's like, what was
right.
the thought process?
Especially, there's some really interesting cases specifically with the Donner Party, which, like, as you and I have talked privately about before,
mm-hmm.
They did everything way too early. Like, it
yeah.
seemed like they did it just because they were just kind of wanting to.
So let's play a game. I'm just wondering, I'm going to give you different scenarios, and I want
uh-huh.
you to tell me how long it would take for you to result to cannibalism.
Okay. Is it, I need to clarify this.
Mm-hmm.
Is it cannibalism where someone is already dead, or cannibalism where I am killing another person?
Ooh, that is important. So maybe I can
because
add that.
Because that matters a lot. Okay.
Maybe
add
I
that
can
as a
add
caveat.
That in. All right. So we've got tundra.
Okay.
We've got people still alive.
Okay.
How long would it take?
Tundra, everyone's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Until someone dies, I'm not doing it.
Okay. Similarly, with almost every... Is there a place where you would... At sea.
Where I would do a murder?
Yeah. At sea.
Okay, so here's the thing. At sea, we gonna be round the clock trying to snatch a fish.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why all of these stories of people trying to survive at sea result to cannibalism a little bit quicker than I would assume.
So a lot of them, especially like with Terror and Erebus, they were frozen
right.
in pack ice. Like,
right.
they straight up couldn't fish if they tried.
Right, but Moby like, Dick is had some
is based
cannibalism.
On, yeah. Yeah, the other thing, though, is, like, if you have nothing to catch a fish with...
Right.
Like,
it's
if you're in the middle... Okay, if you're at a river, okay, try and use your hand. If you're in the middle of the ocean and you don't have anything to catch a fish with, you're not going to catch a fish.
Right. Also, I mean, I feel like, at the very least, on an expedition, wherever you're going, you should be very well equipped with books on wildlife, on how to catch a fish, on just, like, all of
right.
the... Like,
and
any field guide that you have about the area.
And that's the thing is, like, you often find with these that, like, the people who resort to cannibalism are the people who could have been the most informed. But it really, to me, just comes down to, like, I would never kill a person for their meat.
Okay,
like,
so
that's the bit.
We're hanging out. Your Taco Bell takes a little bit too long to...
Oh, my Taco Bell took so long tonight, guys. It took 2 hours to get here.
Yeah. But, like, your Taco Bell takes a little bit too long to come. And,
uh-huh.
you know, how long would it take to resort to cannibalism?
Well, is there a person that's already dead?
I said we're hanging out. I'm not dead.
Oh, you're not dead?
Yeah.
Then, like, we'll probably discuss it as
yeah.
a bit, but not do it.
Cool. Yeah, no, I also totally wouldn't eat you if I got, you know, bored.
Just a little peckish.
Listen, all I'm
but
saying...
But consider this, Annalie.
We run out of bugles.
What if I was rude to you?
See, and that's the thing. Yeah, that's
what
the
What if
thing.
I were rude to you?
Hey, listen, don't ask me questions like that.
Why not?
All I'm saying is if we run out of bugles and then you also, like, say insult my grandmother, you're looking real edible at that point.
Mm. Glad to get that out of the way.
Do our viewers know that I've been vegan for 5 years?
Does it matter?
Does it matter?
This is different.
I'm on a meat fast. I'm hungry for Bezos.
Well, cooking meat and preparing meat is different than eating
it. I'm good at it. I like to cook.
You know?
But the thing is, I'm saving room for Bezos.
We are the polar opposites of the meat is meat discussion.
Yes.
Yeah, because meat
Honestly,
is meat. All meat is exactly exactly the same.
Except for dolphin meat, which is, like, significantly superior.
Yes, no one should eat dolphins. Yes. And obviously, when we say dolphins, we're talking about mammal dolphins, not mahi-mahi dolphins, the fish. That's different. Those are fish.
Exactly.
We're talking about mammals.
Don't eat dolphins. Very intelligent, very cool mammals.
Very sexy.
Smooth, sleek.
Powerful.
Right. But yeah, if meat is meat, you either eat none of it.
You have to be willing to eat all of it or eat none of it.
Yeah, eat none of it or eat all of it, including
humans. If you're in the middle, and that's the thing, is like, murder is wrong, and that's where I stand on that.
Okay.
But if someone is already dead, that isn't murder.
I'm glad to see that there's a line. I also like how this trope was the pioneer, and we could have done something like The Martian, or we could have done something like, you know, even Sigourney Weaver, even though she's not quite a pioneer, but, you know, space exploration. We could have done a lot of things, but immediately we did go to cannibalism.
Yes.
Which, you know, I think says a lot more about...
Just like the Donner Party, we immediately went to cannibalism.
But like many expeditions before us, we resulted to cannibalism like a little bit too soon, I think.
Which, this is going to be one of the cases where I say the next trope before we decide who this one is.
Cool.
The next trope is, of course, not helping your case. So who's the pioneer, baby?
You know exactly who the pioneer is.
The pioneer is me.
The pioneer is
Diggs. I've literally hiked part of the Oregon Trail several times. I've moved back and forth from the East Coast to Oregon to the East Coast, back and forth. From about first through sixth grade, all of my education was filtered through the Oregon Trail.
You're from Oregon.
Oregon. If you pronounce it like that again, I will come to your house
Oregon.
And take your teeth.
Oregon.
Should we? Oh, we're gonna transition to that segment now. Before we do not help in your case.
Time.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to. Mm-hmm.
Hello, everybody. I am so honored to be introducing our new overlord.
Sponsors. Our new sponsors. Pull it together.
Sorry.
We're introducing our new sponsors, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, with their ambassadors, these lovely bottlenose dolphins.
Hello, everybody, and we're very excited to be generously allowed to continue recording by these really majestic creatures. So I'm going to say some cool dolphin facts now. There are currently known to us in our limited scope of understanding 42 species of
thanks for
that was both informational and helpful and a
little erotic. I'll say
I for one am very attracted to dolphins.
Correct. Should we get back to the content?
Yes.
Back to the tropes?
Yes, back to the tropes.
Right. So the next one is not helping your case, which obviously is about the cannibalism discussion we just had.
Cannibalism discussion, and not about the dolphins, because not helping your case.
Not helping your case. So basically, this is when a character is distrusted in a situation, or like just widely distrusted, and everything they say just works against them.
Yeah.
They just dig themselves deeper, not helping your case.
Yes.
So, and this is gonna get a little bit meta, but we can argue, of course, that Herbert West is a necrophiliac.
Okay, all right.
And one could point, hey, Jeffrey Combs, why do you only play characters like this? And Jeffrey Combs will say, hey, I've played really different characters. Think about, you know, Jonathan, the clergyman, and the evil clergyman. And then I say, hey, Jonathan, in that, your girlfriend hangs herself, and then you say to a real fucked up animal with a human face, can I keep her body? That doesn't help your case, my man.
Well, yeah, that'll do it, and that's not helping the case. Not to bring it to like a BBC Sherlock place, but
oh, please do.
A lot of like, just the dialogue that happens between the two of them is, like, you know, the whole ripping my clothes off in a darkened swimming pool, people will talk.
It doesn't help your case.
Doesn't help the case. Like, the whole time is like, oh, yes, very
strict. It doesn't help your case, and it doesn't help the case. But we're gonna do it anyway.
It doesn't help the case. But also, I mean, also linking it back to scientists who might be on the, like, cusp of being evil, you know, there's in Wolf 359, Hilbert will be very much like, ah, yes, I'm a normal, very normal, good, normal scientist, and then will do a dubious morality experiment on one of the people, and also have a, you know, a very specific accent, and then you're like, well, this isn't really helping the case, Dr. No. Hilbert, probably an evil scientist.
Which of us is not helping your case?
I think you're a copy of a copy of a copy of yourself.
Oh, I'm a caricature of myself.
A caricature of yourself. Sometimes you own up to it, though, which...
Occasionally I own up.
Yeah, yep, yeah.
Like the fact that I am literally, at my job, the archivist.
Yeah. Yep, not helping your case.
It doesn't help my case that I'm literally the archivist and have been referred to as that my little archivist.
Oh, wow, good, great, good, and nice.
That pretty new archivist, or that pretty new office boy.
Pretty new office boy.
Which I will interpret to be a Yanto Jones thing and not a Jonathan Sims thing.
Sure, right, sure. You think whatever you want.
I will, actually.
So I think it'll probably be you.
Yeah, it's gonna be me. Speaking of me.
Oh, good, great.
I'm just gonna assign this one right fucking off the bat because, like, I know who I am as a person and I know who you are as a person. The next trope is up close with the monster.
Well, there we go.
So, okay, to define the trope before I get into it, basically, one of the characters has the monster, whether it be zombie, creature, alien, what have you, right up in their personal space. And
so, like, inches away, like, teeth
inches away,
dripping with saliva.
Very. So that, like, there's a classic scene from the Alien franchise of, like, Sigourney Weaver's character Ellen Ripley. Like, she's, like, covered in sweat and she's almost crying. And there's a xenomorph, like, up in her face, kind of like sniffing her out. Yep. Or think Jurassic Park, where they have to stay, like, very still with the T-Rex.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, like, right up in their face.
Not to do a thing, like, How to Train Your Dragon does the same thing.
Yes. Yes, like, it does.
Getting really, really up close. The whole, like, snarling creature inches away.
And you have to stay still.
Yeah. Yeah.
This happens also in, it's a video game, but Until Dawn, there's windows in Until Dawn that are very, like, movement oriented. So if you stay very, very still, they're not going to attack. And there's a scene right before the end where it's like, depending on how many characters you have left alive, but you're playing as this one character and a window gets up in your face, and it's based on, like, controller movement too, so you have to, as the player, keep your controller totally still while they, like, sniff and snarl.
Oh, does it, like, it checks
your your controller will vibrate and you have to keep it still.
Whoa.
It's very frightening.
It's scary because you don't really think about how much you move, how much you breathe. You'd like to think in like a situation you'd be cool and calm and collected.
Right. You're gonna shake, you're gonna breathe out with some fear. I always think in these scenes, like, what counts as movement, right? Because, like, if it's up in your face and, like, you turn away to breathe out, is that movement? Like, is the rise and fall of your chest movement?
Which,
like,
I don't know about y'all, but did you watch Spirited Away?
Yes.
You know when they were just like, you need to hold your breath while crossing this bridge?
Yes.
I would always, always hold my breath to see. I'm just like, Chihiro's a little bitch. I've got the lung capacity for this shit. And then, like, you know, but then a little frog jumps in your face and you're like, oh no.
This trope also, like, holds up with, like, other things that are, like, not, like, the hold still variety, but it's, like, you've got a monster or like a creature in your face. Like mm-hmm. this also works as an intimidation trope, where yeah. I would talk specifically about season 1, episode 3 of Penny Dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
Where the creature grabs Victor Frankenstein by the throat. Well, first he smears blood across his face of his second son, and then pins him up against a pillar by his throat, and then, like, gets literally, like, nose-to-nose with him and threatens him for a long monologue. And, like, the thing is with this is, like, obviously the creature knows he's there. Like, it's not like a thing of, like, oh, stay still and the T-Rex won't see you. But Victor isn't gonna, you know, emote through this. He's not mm-hmm. going to express his abject terror. So yeah. he has to just, like...
Yeah,
his
like
way
trying,
through
trying,
it.
Trying to be brave while somebody is like up yeah. close in your business.
And fully being choked out.
Some of the other tropes that this compares this to is like staring down Cthulhu. Up close with the monster can take a few different forms. Like it can right. be, you know, the perverted sniffing, which is big in, oh God, it's in Hunchback of Notre Dame with Frollo.
Oh yeah.
It's like-
It's predatory. It's 100% predatory.
Yeah, it's whenever there is like something that is, you know, something that is larger and scarier, and one has to be. I think of that scene in Inglourious Basterds with Christoph Waltz, the milk scene, you know?
Yes.
Like one of the cooler scenes right. in acting, where she has to be very, very cool, calm, and collected, and he's like very close. So yeah, the monster doesn't always have to be teeth snarling creature.
Yeah, but it can just as easily be you're sitting across a table from a person yeah. having a conversation with them. And like it is the same sort of thing.
Right. And it makes that kind of like the audience knows that this is the most dangerous thing, but the whole game of it is not to let the person know that you are afraid. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm not afraid of you, but
despite yeah. the fact that they extremely are.
Yep.
It's always quite apparent that they are.
Exactly.
It's a very versatile trope. It has a lot that you can do with it depending on the vibe. Like you have your like purely predatory energy, right? Where you have your like Count Frollo, or you have your Until Dawn, like stuff like that, where it is plain and simple, a monster is sniffing you up and you need to stay still. And then it also moves into the category of like the creature and like the xenomorphs, where it becomes like a very intimate thing. It's not 100% predatory, like it's threatening, but it's also like intimate and sexual, where
did you put the xenomorphs in that too?
No, okay, here's my defense here. This isn't about me being a xenomorph fucker. This is about the fact that the queen literally breeds with Ripley.
Okay.
Isn't me being weird. This is about the whole point of Alien. The reason the facehuggers look like that, the reason the xenomorphs are all female, and the reason that Ripley has the position that she has is it is all a sexual metaphor.
Which is interesting because Sigourney Weaver was originally supposed to be a man.
Right, yeah. Ellen Ripley was written for a man.
Yeah, which like, you know, again, it's a different kind of metaphor then.
Yeah, but then it changes where like the biggest threat at first is the facehugger, mm-hmm. and then the xenomorph, right? Yeah. Because the facehugger is a much different threat than the xenomorph. It's yeah. a much more masculine threat, whereas the xenomorph is a much more feminine threat. Yeah.
Say less, yeah.
I won't say less. I'm
no,
gonna say
no.
more.
Yeah, that's the say yeah. no more.
Anyway, this was just me being like, look, I'm not a xenomorph fucker. This is what Alien's about. I'm not yeah. saying it's sexual just because of
no,
my
of
feelings about
not.
Xenomorph.
Sure, no, sure, yeah, right.
I don't have the same defense yeah. for the creature.
Right, yes, right, yes, right, yes, great, cool, yeah, right. Also, though, honestly, with predatory sniffing, that could absolutely go to Hannibal.
Oh,
all
yes.
I'm saying. And so let's talk about, so Bedwed Behead. Between the xenomorph Hannibal and
oh God.
The creature.
Oh good Lord.
Yeah.
Okay. So, oh fuck. I'm gonna say something very unexpected and controversial right here, right now.
Okay.
Are you prepared for this?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so I would fuck the xenomorph.
Right.
Because I don't see a long-lasting relationship, but I also don't think I could kill a xenomorph. I really don't think it's possible. She would get me.
Right.
She would end me.
And I say we change the rules to bed, wed, behead in that you have to kill the thing that you are.
Right. There's no way. There's no way. And we could make the rule, like, attempt to kill and die in the process. But, like, there's no way. And I'm not going to attempt it. I'm going to have sex with a xenomorph. And that's just how it is. Sure. And I'm going to like it. And it's going to hurt. And it'll be great. And then here's where the controversy starts. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fuck the creature.
Yep.
But I'm going to kill it.
Oh, no!
Because that's, like, the whole thing.
Oh, no.
Like, here's the thing, is I love the creature, and, like, obviously he's the good guy and Victor is not.
Sure.
But I get Victor's deal way too much.
Yeah.
Like, I really, really get it. And, like, part of the attraction to the creature is the...
Oh, but he speaks poetry. He's such a sensitive soul.
Yeah, but he speaks French. He speaks French. Fuck you.
Oh, no.
And I know so does Victor, but, like, I part of the attraction to the creature is the identification with Victor. Mm-hmm. And I think if I separate it from that, it's not as much of an attraction. And so I have to kill the creature. Like, that has to be endgame there.
Right, right. Okay.
And I would marry Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, no.
He'd make me good dinners and he would fuck me right.
Yeah, all right. Okay, all right.
And he would dress nice and I could move into his house and he has a lot of money.
He does have a lot of money, yeah.
And the only thing I would have to change about myself is I'd need to wear more flannels.
That is true. That's true.
But maybe he would appreciate a boyfriend with hallucinations who doesn't wear flannel but wears, you know, dress pants.
Yeah, you might be a little bit too close to his type.
I think he would accept me too quickly.
Yep.
So where are you at on this one? Anything with Hannibal would be self-cessed, so let's talk about that.
Actually, I think I would probably kill Hannibal Lecter.
Is this because of your deep self-loathing?
No, it has nothing to do with me. It's all very... This is a character. Okay. I think right off the bat, I would marry the creature, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because of all the three, really sensitive. I would let the creature go off and, like, canoodle with whoever the creature needed. I did see, like, at the Mütter Museum recently, like, the tall, tall man and was, like, a bit too tall. So 8 feet would be a bit too tall.
Oh, I disagree.
I know you disagree. But for me,
I've
like...
also seen this skeleton and done my measurements.
Yep.
And here's what I will say. 8 to 8.5 is totally fine.
Yeah.
Dimitrescu at the 9.6, that's a bit much.
See, I don't know. See, she would be fine for me, is the thing. I think it's...
Despite the fact that she's 4 feet taller than you?
Yeah, I think so. The thing is, like, she's giant, and I was like, oh... Hello. But she's...
Okay,
like,
so why not the creature then?
Because,
at 8 feet.
Because, and I've said this in a past podcast, if they're too big and very masculine, you're just a bit too tall for me, you know?
So, okay, that's the thing, though, is I resort to the book where it's like, the skin is stretched too tight and he's a skinny goth prince.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And despite him being rather sensitive, he still does have a masculine energy
that's very true.
Is just unavoidable that I'm like, when it gets to, like, don't get me wrong, would be down to clown with somebody like 6 foot, 6'2",
right.
That's all well.
Well, this is also
good.
Because you are a giant.
Your scale of
what is tall is quite different from the mortal man's.
I want to loom. Just let me be tall. Let me be tall.
I do let you be tall because I am built like a wilting Victorian twink.
That's why we're still friends.
We walk around in public together like a Republican nightmare where, like, the femme one is like... tall and like strong and like capable, and the masculine one is like a skinny little bitch boy.
Everybody's like, oh no, nature Ruh-roh. Has turned backwards, my god.
They've turned their back on God and have reversed their hormones.
So the creature is a bit too tall for me, and then
because he has a beanus.
Because he has a beanus, and again,
and identifies with his beanus.
And the problem with the beanus is like 6 foot, fine, sure, I can reach them in heels. Once we get up into 7/8 foot, I'm like, I need to run away from you.
Yeah, we've had very different height differences in relationships.
Yep.
I feel like I have fucked the creature.
Like... Proportions wise. And then the xenomorph.
Oh, they're like 8-9 foot.
I know, but the thing is, I'm gonna be honest, I don't know what sex with a xenomorph would be like. And I'm not a monster fucker like you.
Yeah, I know you're not.
Am I gonna fuck Hannibal? Did I say that I was gonna kill him? And now I'm like, I'm not so sure about the xenomorph.
Yeah, that seems like where you're going.
Yeah, I think I would.
I think you're gonna fuck Hannibal.
I think I would have to kill the xenomorph. I would marry the
creature. So you're gonna masturbate.
I am not Hannibal.
So you're gonna masturbate.
He's very...
Because you are Hannibal Lecter.
He's
Listeners, you should know that the other day, Annalie tried to gaslight me into believing I was a different type of colorblind than I actually am.
What type of colorblind are you?
I'm trypanomalous colorblind.
Are you sure about that, though?
I am extremely certain. On my work computer, I can't tell the difference between links I've clicked on and links I haven't clicked on.
But can you really see yellow is my issue.
I can, I just don't see enough.
But like, can you? All I'm saying is, you know, red, green, blue, does it all start to meld together?
So tell me.
so tell me, Diggs.
So okay, you're gonna kill a xenomorph and masturbate. Could you kill a xenomorph?
Yes. And the fact that you doubt that...
No, I believe it.
I was gonna say, how dare you?
I believe you could kill a xenomorph. I have seen Alien 3. I know you could.
It would be a fight. It'd be sexy, but it'd be a fight.
Mm-hmm. The first romantic thing ever said to me was in first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And this boy told me that I reminded him of Ellen Ripley.
Oh, that is good.
Yes.
Yep.
This is the same boy that in first grade, another boy tried to kiss me on the mouth, well, did kiss me on the mouth, mm-hmm. and then he punched him and then kissed him and said, don't kiss people without asking. How do you like it?
What?
King!
Rock and roll.
King.
That is a
king.
Good
first
person.
Grade king. It is honestly the sexiest thing that anyone has ever done, like, for me.
Yep.
Right,
yep,
like, as far...
Yep,
yeah. You know yep, what I mean. Yeah.
Yep. Ooh, that is good. Sometimes people will say things to me, like, somebody once was like, you are the Robbie Rotten to my Sportacus.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, you stop it now.
Whereas the things I say to you like that are way more combative.
I was gonna say...
Like... Let me cut your left hand off. Let me cut your left hand off, and then we can kiss.
But only once the hook is in place.
Exactly. Yeah, let me install it into your body, and then we can kiss.
And it's a rival thing. Only one of us can survive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's 100% part of it.
You are coming down with me. But
hand in unlovable hand. I hope you die. I hope we both die.
I love that. The pettiness is so good.
When are we going to get so matching mountain goats tattoos, Annalie? I'm being dead serious.
You know what?
I've gotten a tattoo at this point. I know what it feels like. I'm down to get matching mountain goats tattoos if you are. I'm being serious right now.
Listen, Stop it! Shut your mouth! Shut your mouth! Don't play with my heart!
No, I'm not. Specifically from that song, if we pick out matching lyrics, I will do it.
Stop it. But you know what?
Listeners, if you want to pay for our tattoo, since it is Pride Month.
Happy Pride Month, everybody.
Happy Pride Month, everyone.
By the way, let me just say that if you have been consuming our content and enjoying it in any of its forms, and you haven't, told three friends about this podcast, you're officially homophobic. And I don't know what to tell you, but you really do have to do some soul searching.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're gay or not. It is homophobic to not tell three friends about this podcast. And if you haven't rated and reviewed this podcast or subscribed to it, I'm sorry, but I'm a trans man, and that's extremely transphobic.
Yeah.
That you haven't bolstered our reviews.
Kind of wildly problematic of y'all.
Yeah.
You know.
And we are gonna have to make an exposed video about you guys, and it's just a lot of work.
Yeah, listen, you don't want to go through that apology video process. Like,
it's so tough. If you're looking to just, you know, continue your normal unproblematic life, you should, you know, tell three people about the podcast and rate and review and subscribe and, pay for us to get matching tattoos.
Here's the thing. If one day we make, this is a side note, if one day we make enough money off this podcast to get it matching tattoos, it's happening. It'll happen.
Oh, yeah.
If this podcast makes enough money to pay for a tattoo, I will get a tattoo.
I love it.
And also, we would like to also say that if you do not like this podcast, then you are incredibly dolphin phobic, which arguably is worse than
way worse
than being homophobic or transphobic. And
every month is dolphin month. Because they are the kings of the sea. Boats with motors shouldn't exist.
Shouldn't exist.
Propellers are bad.
And not sexy in any way. For you see, they do hurt the dolphins, and that's
they interrupt the sonar. So just ships are bad, and we shouldn't.
Diggs,
be in
Diggs,
the water.
You have to look at me, Diggs. You have to be strong. You have to say it, okay? With more
conviction,
all right?
Propellers aren't safe for dolphins, and we shouldn't be using them in open waters because it can interrupt their communication.
We owe our lives, our safety, and this podcast to the dolphins. Thank you, dolphins.
You dolphins. If you want to continue to support dolphins, you can subscribe to our podcast on all podcast platforms. You can follow us at AnnieDTArt and Momento Mortsafe on both TikTok and Instagram. And you can follow Genre Blind Podcast on Instagram. If you have any suggestions for us, or significant others you want to us to break up with for you, you can email us at genreblindpodcast@gmail.com with your tips, suggestions, opinions, and people you'd like us to break up with, but you do need to include a positive affirmation about dolphins with every email.
Or we are not allowed to, or we won't want to do your suggestion.
And this is just a side note. With all of your emails, please include the name and pronouns you'd like to be addressed by so that we can confidently say it on air.
Give us more information.
Give us
tangle yourselves in our web.
Give the name or username and the pronouns you need and a positive affirmation about dolphins, and we'll read all of it. Anyway, this has been Genre Blind, season
Diggs,
2.
Diggs.
Dolphin Blind.
Dolphin Blind.
Dolphin Blind, season 2.
We're so sorry.
We're so sorry.
Diggs, what have you done?